Summer is in full swing. The 4th of July is behind us. Labor Day is almost 2 months off. Plenty of time for whatever it is we're able to do, given the constraints of the COVID-19 pandemic. One of the effects of the pandemic and all the people spending more time at home is an apparent increase in gardening. More people appear to be tending gardens this year for fun or for food or for a bunch of different reasons. So we spend time each week with Lynn Kunstman of the Jackson County Master Gardeners Association, who graciously answers our many questions about what to do when we want green things to grow and grow well. And there are those of us who don't have a lot of experience doing that, so we ask Lynn lots of really basic questions. Lynn, thanks for joining us once again.
Thanks for letting me be there.
You know, it was funny because we finished up last week talking about the promiscuity of squash and how just because you plant seeds for a certain kind of squash doesn't mean that's what you'll get. And it was funny because it was within a day of that one of my friends on Facebook put a picture up of a white thing growing in her garden and said, "I don't think this is the squash I planted." And I got to play Mr. Smarty Pants and said, "Well,
there you go. I know what your squash have been doing."
It's
kind of fun to be able to do that.
I gave you a Master Gardener's full credit, though, to make sure that I was
doing it. Oh, that's good. Well, thank you for that.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, before we kind of get going into questions, I wanted to see if it's okay if I give a shout-out to our listeners in Bury, England.
Mm-hmm.
We have I have a friend who lives just north of Manchester with her family in lockdown, and they started gardening, and they listen to the show every week.
Excellent. So, well, I'm so glad to have our listeners in Bury, England. So, boy, that's a very different growth zone, I would think, from this one. It's pretty far north.
It's not that much different from, say, up in the Willamette Valley, Portland area.
Mm-hmm.
So they have very, very similar climate and vegetation as the Pacific Northwest. When I was traveling in England, I felt completely at home. I knew all the plants, I recognized all the ecosystems. It's very, very similar to what we have up here in sort of the Pacific Northwest.
That's really interesting. So then over the course of the distance that you travel here, and you mentioned living in Humboldt County for a while, I mean, we have a lot of microclimates and stuff, but are the plants relatively similar place to place here too? I mean, I guess I assume that, you know, we go from so dry to so wet in this region that there'll be vast differences.
So and there are. I mean, Oregon in itself is huge, is vastly different, because if you're on the coast, you know, down in Curry County, you've got sort of Humboldt County, Del Norte County conditions there. You've got redwoods and Doug fir and, you know, huckleberries growing and all the sword ferns and that whole moist environment. And it's great for growing things like, especially if you're near the coast, great for things like cabbages and broccoli and Brussels sprouts and artichokes and all, you know, things that like cool, moist, kind of overcast conditions. Harder to grow things like peppers and tomatoes when you're right there on the coast. But here in the valley, in the Rogue Valley, specifically the Rogue Valley, it's a very unique climate, because our climate is exactly the same climate as the Sierra foothills of California, the gold country of the California foothills. And so it's very, very, very different. It's a hot, dry summers, cold, wet winters. So very different from the coast, and then very different from, you know, when you get out into the basin, which is a completely different kind of climate zone that you have to deal with. Much longer, colder winters, much less rainfall. So we have a lot of, of course, when you go north, you've got the sort of northern Oregon, Washington, Willamette Valley conditions. So lots of different kinds of gardening conditions, depending on where you are. It's why it's really important for people to have a really good gardening resource book.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that we tend to recommend is the Sunset Garden Book, because it actually breaks down all of those little kind of smaller regions in the West, in the Western states, into those little kind of micro regions, where things like the agricultural zones from USDA are just these broad, sweeping swaths that don't address what's going on in your specific area. So we like to tell people, get that Sunset Garden Book and look up your town and find where it is and follow those climate guidelines.
So even within what you're talking about here, then, with, you know, you get the finer detail of the Sunset Garden book. I mean, how different can the conditions be on, say, north facing slope and south facing slope, even within those zones?
That's true. Yeah, you have you know, little microclimates that you can take advantage of in your yard. So, you know, if you have a north-facing wall or a west-facing wall, you can grow different kinds of plants. I grow more shade-loving plants, obviously, on the northern side of my house. On the western wall of my house, I grow year-round garden greens, edible greens, because the wall keeps them warm during the winter. The sun comes up and they get plenty of sun, even though it's low in the sky. And that wall that's creating some warmth for them keeps them going. So, yeah, you can take advantage of those kinds of things. And you have to be aware of it, too, when you plant.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you put something that really is not going to be able to take baking sun for 8 hours a day, you better not put it on the south side of your house in this valley. You know,
right, because it will get baked.
You're going to have a crispy critter. You know, it's really important to know what the plant needs are before you go plunking it into your yard.
So in that particular example you give then, I mean, are there you know, little garden umbrellas or something you can stick out if you realize you put it in the wrong place? But you're
absolutely. There are things like shade cloth, mm-hmm, that you can purchase at the nurseries, which will cut the sun, and we use it a lot in gardening. You know, if you've got plants that are going to be too affected by, you know, too much sun at any given time, you can draw shade cloth over them. Nurseries use it all the time. When you go into the nursery, you're often under a canopy of this sort of green woven cloth that the light can get through, but it's not, they're not out in full, you know, Southern Oregon sun.
Right, it's more of a shady kind of sun because they got
shade. Yeah, yeah, it's right. A little relief from the total, you know, baking that can occur.
Our Master Gardener is back with us on The Exchange. Lynn Kunstman from the Jackson County Master Gardeners Association, answering our questions patiently about things in the garden and growing around our houses. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Carter in Wolf Creek. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
The question I have is, what do you do about the invasive wild pea that's in full bloom now?
If it's in bloom, get out and cut it. You want to cut it before it sets seed. You know, get it down. Something I forgot to mention last week, as a method of dealing with weeds. If you have a patch that is, you know, growing rampant with lots of different weeds, is cover cropping. Meaning you purchase a crop that is an annual, either a grass or they sell cover crop mixes at all the nurseries, and you sow that and let that come up. It will shade out a majority of the weeds that are coming up in the areas of your yard where, mm-hmm, you don't want them. It's a really effective way of getting rid of weeds. And what you do is you allow the cover crop to grow. When it starts to bloom, when it's in about a third to half bloom, in other words, half the plants are starting to bloom, you mow it down and let it lie and be a mulch on the ground. And then you sow again. If you've got a big bank of weed seeds on your property, you are probably going to need to cover crop pretty consistently and continuously for a couple years, until all those weed seeds have sprouted,
mm-hmm,
and because they won't all sprout in 1 year, and then you just keep doing that. That's a really effective way of getting rid of weeds, and I didn't mention it last week when we were talking about that.
Mm-hmm. And so, Carter, are you having a big wild peas problem this year? You there, Carter? Looks like he left. Okay.
They're very rampant. The, mm-hmm, wild peas get very big very fast. And so you have to keep cutting them back and stay on top of them. Or, you know, and or get a cover crop in and prevent them from being able to get up and, you know, up and away.
Are the wild peas edible, Lynn, do you know?
Not that I know of.
Okay. You know, I must have been there.
I don't know. I mean, I'm not familiar with that, but, we'd have to Google that.
Okay. Yeah, I ask because there are times when, particularly with foxtails, I feel like I just want to throw up my hands and go, okay, can you eat this stuff?
It
turns out foxtails are a kind of millet, but it sounds like the work you'd have to do to get the edible part unbelievably ridiculous.
And the pain would be not worth it.
Right, and you need to keep it away from the dog and the cat, too. Yeah.
My God.
So when you talk about these cover crops to help shade over and eradicate the weeds, what's a good one?
So in the summer, there's buckwheat, which grows very rapidly. It has a nice hollow stem. When you cut it down, it makes this lovely mulch. When it blooms, the bees love it. And it's a summer crop. It loves the heat. It will grow very rapidly. It grows very thick and lush. And so that's a really good one for summer. And then in the winter, there are things in spring or the cooler seasons. Red clover is a great one. It has a beautiful, it's about 2 to 2.5 feet tall. It has a beautiful long red flower that the bees can utilize. Once again, you can cut it down. It's fixing nitrogen in your soil, because it's a legume. And then there are other mixes that have, winter rye or winter wheat, things that they'll just grow up and you cut them down and they become part of a green manure, basically, for your garden.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad you brought up manure, because I noticed when I was looking at things to do in July, not just at the Master Gardener's site, but elsewhere,
right.
I ran across the concept of rotted cow manure.
Right.
This is really the season of smells then, isn't it?
It is. It truly is. Yeah, if you have a chicken coop, if you've got, a goat pen, goat manure is great for, mixed in with the straw and the hay that they've been eating. To spread on the garden as mulch or add to the compost pile for fertilizing. And fertilizing is important. This is the month when you want to put fertilizer on your asparagus. You want to prune your cane berries. You want to keep those berries wet, too. Berries like a lot of water. The cane berries, all the boysenberries, blackberries, raspberries, they need an inch of water a week. But they really like a side dressing of, compost or manure or sawdust mulch to keep the soil evenly wet and evenly moist. Blueberries will take a lot of water this time of year.
I noticed that on the list there the July list says that blueberries need constant water. Keep mulched with wood chips or sawdust, you just said. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they need a lot of water.
I was curious about the blackberries, though, because, I don't know, in my neighborhood, you don't have to try to grow blackberries. They just show up.
And those blackberries, as we all know, are Himalaya berries, which are an invasive Asian species that has gotten loose and polluted every environment on the West Coast. And we love the taste of them, but they are a big problem. And yes, they do very well without extra irrigation, as do, our wild berries that are growing out, where the Himalaya berries will come and outcompete them out in the wild. They do well without summer water. But the ones in your garden, if you want big, fat, juicy berries, you need to be, and the cultivated varieties don't have roots that are as deep. Mm-hmm. And so you need to keep them, and you want to grow the cultivated varieties because you can get thornless blackberries to put in your yard.
Mm-hmm.
And and those are much more easy to harvest. To
yes.
Sell.
Yeah. Yeah. The whole thing about the great taste of blackberries, but you come back with wishing you had brought gloves with you.
Arms. And and the other thing about that is you don't know who's been spraying near those things when you're out foraging, in the wild. So we like to grow ours at home and not have the thorns and know what we're getting.
Yeah, especially along roadsides. Be careful of sprays. I wish I would point that out to you. Well brought up. Let's take a call here. Peter in Ashland, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Lynn Kunstman from Jackson County Master Gardeners.
Good morning.
Hi.
Good morning. I'm not sure if it's not my question, but the what do you say to Bermuda grass?
No, I say hi. And
no, I guess any favorite plant to cover it.
I pour boiling water on it, but now I've got so much in my yard that it's like, okay, you're just going to be, you know, under the cover crop, and you're going to be out-competed by the native ground cover that I've planted, the self-heal, and you're going to have to compete with that. It's just,
you
don't get every bit of root. You can't get rid of it unless you're spraying some horrible.
Oh, okay. So this is,
poison about, on. Yeah, it's really hard to get rid of every root.
All right. So, Peter, that was not your question. What is your question?
Yeah, you got to excavate.
Yeah.
My question is whether or not you tend to take the flowers off of Jerusalem artichokes.
Oh, well, I've never really grown them for I had some once, and I never took the flowers off because I left them for the bees.
Yeah,
I like the bees to be able to access the pollen and nectar in those. So I would leave them on.
I just sort of like the garlic that, of course, you're inclined to cut those scapes off instead of letting them go on with that theory.
You want to do that with your onions and garlic. And the garlic scapes are delicious. You eat those. Those you take in the house and you pan fry those or roast them or use them in. Yeah, they're delicious.
Wow,
you eat them like asparagus.
Okay, thanks for the questions and comments. Peter, Danae and Talent, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Lynn Kunstman.
Hi there.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. Lynn, I have an English walnut tree. The tree itself is very healthy, very old, but my walnuts are dropping from the tree with black spots. I will say also, too, that the leaves themselves we noticed had tiny, not all of them, just randomly, little bubbles in the leaves themselves. So I'm just wondering what's wrong with my walnut tree.
Just off the top of my head, I don't know. I would have to research that. But it sounds like some kind of a wilt or, fungal infection. I mean, just from your description. What I would recommend is that you go to the Master Gardener's website and take some pictures of what's occurring on the tree. And send those pictures to the plant clinic. You can access that through our Jackson County Master Gardeners website, and they will research what the problem is, and they will get back to you with a solution for that, or at least be able to tell you what it is you're facing. Anytime you have a problem of that sort, it's always good to send a picture in to the people who can then go to the research facility up at the college and get the information back to you.
And Danae,
if
you go to jeffexchange.org and look for the announcement of today's session, there's a direct link there to the Master Gardener Plant Clinic right there too.
Perfect, because I was going to actually try to send an actual walnut in.
Mm-hmm.
But a picture is a lot easier.
Pictures play.
The clinics aren't open now at the extension offices. We're not allowed on campus, and so it's all virtual. But pictures work fine. If you've got good photos, those people can take that and then do the research, and they get back to you usually within 24 hours.
All right. Thank you for that, Danae. And then I wanted to ask about terroir. And we talk about this with wine, but actually hold the terroir question because I want to get one of our other callers in here. Byron and Ashland, welcome to the exchange.
Oh, thank you. Lynn, you know me as Brad. In the neighborhood you used to live in, I put in a peach tree that has the leaves keep shriveling up and dying off, and I don't know whether to move it to a sunnier spot or do what.
I don't think it's going to help. You've got peach leaf curl. It's really common here in the valley. There are some.
I'm sorry. Wait a minute. I meant cherry. I had a cherry.
Okay. Yeah, tree. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, cherries do like full sun. Once again, I recommend that you send pictures of the condition to the plant clinic, and they can give you an information about how to, they, you know, they have spray regimens that they might be recommending, or they might be able to tell you what the environmental conditions are that you need to address.
And that place is where? The clinic?
It's the plant clinic at Jackson County Master Gardeners.
Thank you.
Yeah, you can either Google Master Gardener Plant Clinic Jackson County, or go to jeffexchange.org, and we have a link right there from the announcement of Lynn's appearance today.
Yeah.
All right.
Sure, absolutely.
Good to have you on again, Byron. And I guess we'll have to hold the terroir question for for next week, but because we're out of time
so
here.
So much to do.
Yeah, true. So much to do. We really cram a lot into 22 minutes here. But also, I want to let our listeners in Bury, England know that now that I see that the East Lancashire Railway Luxury Dining Trains is near you, I may pay you a visit at some point.
That's right. Those are very cool, by the way.
Sounds great. Well, thanks for letting us know about our listeners in England, and thanks for bringing your expertise to bear once again, Lynn.
All right. Thanks a lot.
All right. Take care. Lynn Kunstman joins us once a week from Jackson County Master Gardeners Association to help us figure our way through the garden in this year when so many more people are gardening. You can certainly send in an email, and we'll get you ready for next week. And we'll talk to Lynn again next Wednesday. That'll do it for this hour of the Jefferson Exchange. Julian Zelizer returns to the Jefferson Exchange in hour two to talk about burning down the house. Stay tuned.